This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
I'd go back to bed if I were you.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. I'm afraid I can't start your day with much joyful news. The stock markets are getting crushed again this morning. The dollar's on the slide for the fourth straight day. Oil prices are climbing. Where is the snooze button? In Asia, the markets finished about 2% lower. The Dow had another triple-digit loss yesterday, 131 points, about a percent. The Dow is barely hanging on to 12,000 now. The NASDAQ fell 28 points. The S&P 500 was down 13. Oil's back up to $137 a barrel. Airbus and Boeing are used to doing battle, and here's something else for them to fight about. Yesterday, the Government Accountability Office urged the Air Force to do a deal with Airbus to build the next generation of airborne fuel tankers. This obviously didn't sit well with the American company, Boeing. But somebody has to build these things. Steve Henn explains.
The GAO found the Air Force didn't follow its own rules in awarding a massive tanker deal to Northrop Grumman and Airbus. That's an opening for Boeing, says Lauren Thompson at the Lexington Institute.
Boeing has not now won the tanker competition. What it has earned is the opportunity to come back and be evaluated fairly.
The GAO's report is non-binding, but Nick Schwellenbach at the nonprofit Project on Government Oversight says Boeing has deep ties to the Democratic Congress and the upper hand on Capitol Hill.
Congress is going to put a lot of pressure on the Defense Department.
What does that mean? Lauren Thompson.
It's nearly inevitable that the whole competition will have to be redone from scratch.
But Northrop and Airbus have their own congressional allies, and Thompson says those firms will fight to limit any new bidding process and make it fast.
This is the latest delay in a process that is now stretched across a decade and saddled the Air Force with a fleet of 500 tankers that are approaching 50 years of age. Nobody has ever operated jets for this long, so we don't know how long they're going to last before they start falling out of the sky.
In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
All the attention on housing has been about foreclosures, but today Congress looks at another kind of housing crisis that might be brewing, older, low-income rental housing. Sarah Gardner has more.
Lawmakers will hear some sobering statistics. Between now and 2013, three-quarters of federally subsidized rental units will be in jeopardy. That's when contracts on a lot of Section 8 housing developments expire. Section 8 renters pay up to 30% of their income in rent. The government pays the balance, subject to a federal cap. Michael Bodakin, president of the National Housing Trust, says once those contracts expire, owners can charge any rent the market will bear.
We show that when an owner opts out of Section 8 housing, the average rent hike is anywhere from 20 to 40%.
Bodakin expects future home foreclosures will force many families into the rental market, and that will push rents even higher. House Democrat Barney Frank is working on legislation aimed at preserving affordable housing. Bodakin is urging him to include tax and other incentives for owners. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrive and Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit Fortune 500 company helping members thrive in retirement. You can learn more at thriveand.com/retirement. And by the Medtronic Foundation, working to reduce heart disease, the number one killer of American women, by supporting Women Heart. Information at womenheart.org.
China has evacuated tens of thousands of people from the area hit by last month's earthquake. It's the rainy season, and the government's worried about landslides and floods. China's government still rules with its communist iron hand. But during this crisis, it has relaxed its grip somewhat and let non-governmental organizations do some of the work. Lisa Chow has this report from Chengdu.
Tianjin stands in a small room that's become command center for more than 30 Chinese NGOs. She looks at her wall and rattles off that day's activities, distributing water purification systems, providing books for children, and coordinating SUVs and radios for relief efforts. Tianjin is one of three people in charge of Chengdu 512, a coalition of NGOs that formed 3 days after the earthquake.
The government deals with big projects on a macro level. NGOs, we're smaller, but we're also powerful in the sense that we're specialized.
The impact of last month's earthquake is so widespread and the needs are so great, the government has essentially outsourced certain responsibilities to NGOs. Chen Taiyong says the latitude granted to these groups is unprecedented. He's China director for the U.S.-based charity Heifer Project International.
This time, government already recognized the power of the NGOs.
But he points out, it's still the government coordinating the work. And that's the hitch. The ruling Communist Party still has ultimate power. For example, to get access to some of the affected areas, you need a government-issued pass. And the government bans most NGOs from soliciting public donations. Only large charities, like China Red Cross, are allowed to openly fundraise. But now, more than a month after the earthquake, the Chinese media and even the general public are questioning where all the money is going. Tianjin says her organization, Chengdu 512, is as transparent as it gets. She points to a ledger, essentially sheets of paper taped to the wall.
See here? We spent 120 yuan, and it says what it's for.
She says the list is posted every day online. And she says her organization spends very little on administrative costs.
We're not allowed to raise money from the public yet, but I think we will someday.
In the meantime, it's the Chinese government that's providing office space for her organization. In Chengdu, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
Gas is so expensive in the Gaza Strip, some taxi drivers are making their own fuel. Four parts cooking oil, one part turpentine. Others have tried motor oil, kerosene, pesticides, even air freshener. The downside to all this, the price of some of these things is going way up, and the fumes can't be good for you. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.